Welcome to Behind the Badge, Illinois, special Mother's Day edition. We have Chief Bird joining me here. Mimi was on. I screwed up and didn't hit record, so we're doing this again. So I apologize, Mimi. We've got Dave's mom, and we've got Maggie, which is Mimi's mom. So we're redoing this interview without Mimi, who was on originally. So I apologize again to Mimi. So welcome to the show, Maggie. Special Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to you. Happy Mother's Day to Dave's mom, Lil. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, good to be here.
So your daughter, Mimi, rose through the ranks of the Illinois State Police. And what was it like growing up as the mother of Mimi? And when did you know that Mimi had, you know, had leadership capabilities to become a successful police officer?
Well, the thing that I remember most with Mimi is in kindergarten, when I went up for parent-teachers conference. First of all, I had always had, like, you know, perfect reports on her, you know, like everyone loved her. No one had anything bad to say about her. And when I went up there, she said, "Oh, Mimi is such a lovely child, but," and I was like, "Oh my God, what are they going to say? What's she going to say about her? But she tends to run things." And I was like, "Oh my God, she's bossy." And that's when, I guess, that's like the first inkling.
Got it. There wasn't any reports of her throwing kids up against the lockers and doing frisks or busting into their lunch boxes and checking out what they were getting for lunch?
No, I think, you know, she was probably telling everyone where to sit, you know, how, you know, what crayons to use, you know, what chalk to use. She was probably, what books to read. She was probably bossing that way.
Got it. So what was it like when she came to you and said, "Mom, this is," well, you had told the story of her going on a trip when she was very young with a 9-to-5 job. Can you talk to our podcast listeners about that?
Yes. Well, one of the first inklings, I remember she kind of had a inkling to be like an FBI agent with that Jodie Foster movie, Silencing of the Lambs. And yeah, That's kind of where I think she got her first, you know, taste of it. And then during college, during the summer when she was home, she worked at a association management company for SIGGRAPH that did computer graphics. And it was a summer show, and it was always held mostly on the West Coast. But she went and traveled there. You know, they did such a good job during the summer that they asked her and her friend to come and, to go travel with them. So she was able to, so she went there. That was the first time that she was 18 years old. That was the first time she ever flew on a plane, and she flew by herself. And wow. Then after that, once she finished college, like in that last year, she says, "You know something?" She goes, "I know from working this job all through, you know, college, that I don't want a 9-to-5 job. I won't be able to handle it. And now I know what I want."
Got it. So what was your thought when she came to you, like, in college or out of college, and she said, "Mom, I'm applying for the Illinois State Police"? What went through your mind? And did you ever have anybody in the family that was in law enforcement, Maggie?
You know, my grandfather was a Chicago policeman. They came from Ireland. And he lived on the South Side. And he was a policeman. But none of his kids you know, like my mother and her siblings, none of them went into law enforcement. That was like the only like relative that we had besides Mimi. But when she said that she wanted to try out for the state police, she wanted to get into law enforcement, and she signed up. She applied for the CPD as well, and the Illinois State Police, thank God, called her first. So that's where, you know, like once she got the call.
You didn't want her in the neighborhoods? You wanted her on the highways?
You know, I was, you know, I know with Chicago Police Department, and this was way back when, like in the 90s. So, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, like it is today, you know, where they don't get the respect that they need, that they should get, you know. I mean, it was still fine back then, but I guess I did want her, like when she got called for the ISP, when they answered first, you know, like she applied for both and ISP answered first. So I was happy about that.
So Dave, talk about the 6 months, because Mimi had mentioned the 6 months where you're gone, right? What's that like? And when Maggie would only see her daughter every week. Can you just give an overview real quick of what that 6 month training is?
Oh my, yeah. I mean, it's the longest training in the state. I mean, you know, the ISP Academy is a paramilitary organization, so it's like boot camp. I mean, if you can, it's boot camp. That's what it is. And I mean, they tell you when to go to sleep. They tell you what time to get up. They tell you what you're going to eat. And I mean, you don't get any options. Like, I mean, CPD's Academy, you know, those guys get to go home every night. You know, you're in barracks with the ISP. So, I mean, it was tough. I mean, they were in your face every day in line. Even when you're in line for chow, they're in your face. I mean, you were doing push-ups in line before you ate. I mean, it was boot camp. I mean, you know, but you were in the best shape you ever been. If you didn't come in good shape, you definitely were going to leave in good shape, because they made sure of it. And being away from home, you know, it was tough. I mean, I remember I used to come home, and you really don't have a lot of time, because you leave on Friday at 5. And for the people who live in Chicago, I mean, that means you're not getting home till what, 8:15, 8:30. And then before, you got to be back there Sunday at 5. So you really didn't even have you might have one full day, but heck, you were so tired, Dave, you just wanted to rest. So I mean, it was a tough academy, way tougher than it is now. I mean, nowadays, the academies are nothing like this, because, you know, I'll just be honest, it's an easier process now in the academy compared to when we went through. But Mimi was tough, and she stuck it out. Like, I had maybe 6 or 7 female officers in my class, and they were amazing. They did a great job. And Mimi, you know, kept that tradition going with her when she went through with her class. But like I said, we were probably, I think I had maybe 7 or 8 years before Mimi came on. So when she came on the job, I was her sergeant. But she was probably the best officer on that shift. And she worked midnight shift, Dave, on a platoon with nothing but males. She was the only female for the most part, and she held on every night. And I was just extremely impressed, and she probably got that from her mom. So, because she held her own, boy, and it was awesome to see.
Hey, Maggie, what was the biggest transformation during those 6 months from when Mimi first left to when she graduated the academy? What type of transformation did you see, both, you know, physically and emotionally, and as a mother, you know, changed her from, a young woman into an officer?
Physically wise, you know, she was like, she was probably always in good shape, but I could tell that she was like stronger and, you know, like telling like stories about the stories that the recruiters told to them, you know, how they have to be mentally ready for that. And like I could tell that she was really anxious to get, you know, done with the 6 months and to go out and start. So she was like, she was ready. She was ready. And like I said, I'm not sure if they still do that 6 months. Do they, Dave?
Yeah, it's still the same. The academy time has not changed. The posture, okay, though, has changed a lot. So they're not in their face as much as they were with us. I mean, you know, it was, I got to tell you, it was boot camp. I can't explain it any other way. You know, and I'm not I was not in the military, but the guys who were there who had been in the military said this is like boot camp again. You know, that's all they kept saying. So they, and those are people who actually went through boot camp in the, through the military. So yeah, that's, it's still same amount of time, but a different posture though.
Yeah.
So your daughter, Mimi, Maggie, patrolled the Dan Ryan. And for those that don't know what the Dan Ryan is, that's, you pick it up at the interchange, basically at Roosevelt all the way out to, well, it turns into the Bishop Ford or, you know, whatever it is. But it's basically through the heart of the south side of Chicago, right? You've got the old Comiskey Park. You've got the Cell, you know, where the White Sox play, all the way out to until the interchange. You pick up the Skyway and all that stuff. So what was it like knowing that your daughter, who's from the south side, is going to be monitoring and patrolling the streets and the highways? Well, it's not so much the streets, but, you know, the highways on the south side of Chicago.
Well, you know, that was really like the countless nights that I didn't sleep until she got home. I can't even go, you know, tell you about that. But the thing with the Dan Ryan at midnight, If you asked her what was your favorite patrol, she still to this day says midnight on the Dan Ryan. That's where you get everything. You get guns, you get drugs, you get, you know, everything on midnight on the Dan Ryan. And that's what she thrived for that. And I can't tell you the sleepless nights. And just, you know, when I heard her come in and go to her room, I was like, oh, thank God. Thank you, God.
Well, I was looking over the application to be part of this podcast, Maggie, and your daughter put down 5'7", 105 pounds, very soft-spoken. Didn't have much of an opinion on too many things and was a wallflower. And I've learned
that's
not the, can you give a proper description of your daughter? Because I think, Dave, we might have a charge against falsifying government, because we are a government entity. This
that's
podcast,
right.
Leaves in our heads.
I believe you know, government. It's a felony, Dave, for sure.
Yeah,
it's not true.
I remember Dave said that when he first started working with her, he could barely see her head above the steering wheel.
Oh God!
So she's very, very small, but her biggest and greatest weapon is her mouth. She has got a loud mouth, and I can imagine that she probably sent a lot of criminals or forced a lot of criminals to cower because of her loud mouth.
So she's not 5'7", is what you're saying, Mom? Are you verifying that that
correct.
Was?
Correct.
I'm not
5'7". I'm taller than her.
Right.
Okay.
And her nickname, Dave, we call her Mouse.
Mouse.
So that explained a lot.
Got it. So Maggie, as a mother of a, I said officer, it was a trooper. I apologize to all the state troopers out there because I know that is a point of contention. So I apologize. What was it like watching your daughter enjoy the job, not only enjoy the job, but work her way up through the command and eventually taking over Dave's position when Dave left ISP and moved on? What was it like as a mother watching your daughter thrive and work her way up the chain of command?
I was so proud of her because I knew that everything that she got, everything she worked for, she had worked hard for. And I was so proud of her, especially for staying on staying on the streets. She could have gone to other departments, but chose not to. And I think that's what really helped her and gave her the respect she needed as she was climbing the ladder.
Yeah, she did. She replaced me, and it was the big, you know, I would tell you, it was one of the best days of my life. It was at my retirement party, Dave, and we had like a luncheon. It was retirement luncheon. And I got a video of it. You know, I said, I have one last order to fulfill as the colonel of patrol. And I was able to take my colonel insignias off of my collar and put it on hers. She didn't even know it was going to happen. But, I called her up there and she was like, oh, I was like, yeah, this is my last duty as colonel of patrol for Illinois State Police. And I was like, I'm putting my insignias on her. So she actually has my colonel insignias, because it meant that much to me that she took my place.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So Maggie, in closing here, for other mothers of children, right, especially young girls or college aged women that are thinking about getting into law enforcement, what would you tell them, and what would you tell their mothers about supporting their children's chosen career path?
Well, I wouldn't talk about how much you worry and your sleepless nights, but I would tell them to, you know your daughter, you know what she is capable of, and support her all the way.
Got it. Well, we appreciate you joining the show. We're going to bring on Dave's mom now, Lil. Want to welcome to the show Chief Bird's mom, Lil. Dave, you want to properly introduce your mom to our podcast listeners, buddy?
Yes, of course. It's my beautiful mom, Lil, and she's so amazing. I can't, like I said, she's basically, made me everything I am. I learned my work ethic from her. My moral compass is pointed in the right direction because of her. You know, all my values, everything that makes me who I am is because of my mother. I grew up in a single parent home, and my mom has always been my rock. She's just an amazing person. She was the type of person that went to work every day, no matter what, rain, sleet, snow. She got up and went to work because she knew she had to, because she had to take care of family. And I can't tell you how much I love her because of that, but even more how much I respect her for the woman that she is. And, because a lot of times people tell you that a woman can't raise a man, but I always challenge that because my mother did it, without any assistance from any male figures. So for the most part, so my mom, she definitely bucked that tradition or that saying that you can't, that a woman couldn't raise a man. I would challenge that 100% because she did it. And, she's just an amazing person, Dave. And I'm happy she was able to jump on with us on this Mother's Day weekend so we can, just share our love for our mothers. I know a lot of our chiefs on here, moms have passed, and I understand. And, you know, and I, you know, I hate that. I'm very lucky to still have my mom, just like Mimi is still lucky to have hers. And but I do want to wish all the moms a happy Mother's Day. And that's my mom. And I can speak about my mom for hours, Dave. So it's not enough time on a podcast to talk about my mom.
Hey, Lily.
Thank you.
How does that make you feel, Lil?
Oh, my God. I'm just kind of like, my heart is just like pounding. I'm bursting. But I love my son, and I always will. And what he is just, it's a compilation of a lot of different things. But he is such a great person. He's such a good-hearted person. And I just love him for how he is and the way he turned out. He's giving, he's kind, he's all of that. And so really, when he became a policeman, I was afraid that some of that would change, but it did not. It did not. He just kind of enhanced all of that stuff into his job. So he's just such a great person.
There's a picture in Dave's office of him and a police or a cowboy. I can't figure out what it is because I haven't been up there. But there's a picture of him in a uniform. I think there might be a cowboy hat on. I think there's a lasso and a horse in the background. But he's wearing a star. What can you tell us the origin of that picture and that uniform?
He just always wanted to be involved in law enforcement. I don't know where it came from. It may have been a cowboy movie or something. I have no idea, but it was like ingrained in him. And he went to school forever in that same outfit. So again, it just seemed to happen, and he loved it. He loved the little star, and he loved taking charge of everything. So this just, I cannot understand the origin of it, but it just happened, and it became his life force.
If he allowed you to take that to the dry cleaners or put it through the washing machine or enable you to throw soap on him and lather him up while he was still wearing it, which of the three best describe how you were able to wash that uniform because he wore it all the time?
Because I wrestled him down and took it off of him and washed it. But then I immediately had to take it out the dryer and put it back on him. So it was just a part of his constant uniform.
Got it. Well, Dave rose through the ranks in high school. We've heard about his All-State honors, or at least in his head All-State honors, of being a running back at Lindholm High School. Lindblom. He actually sent me press clippings, honest to God, press clippings of how he steamrolled over the current Chicago police superintendent. And he actually told that story when I had the Chicago police superintendent, who's a pretty big guy. What's the superintendent's last name?
Snelling. Larry Snelling.
Snelling. I mean, he looks like he could put the pads on today, Larry, Superintendent Snelling, and take some people out on the football field. But so he when he realized that his 5.2 speed in the 40 wasn't going to make him an NFL or even a Division III football playing star, but in his mind that 5.3 40 speed was lightning speed. And he goes into law enforcement. What was that thought process when Dave decided and declared his major in college in criminal justice, and he was going down that path? What were your thoughts?
My thoughts were, again, I have to tell you, because of his penmanship when he was young, I assumed he was going to be a doctor. And that was my aspiration. But when he went to college and decided on this law enforcement major, I was like, whoa, okay, the doctor thing is out. So I had to deal with that. But that was not what I was looking forward to. But I came around.
What was it like breaking it to your mom, Dave, that when you went down, you know, that when you're in college and you're deciding on the college, you went to college in the South, that this was going to be your career path? What were your thoughts?
Wow, I knew she wasn't going to be happy. I can tell you that, you know. And like I said, I went to school. She sent me to school in Louisiana, and you know, she was. I think she was, you know, one of my best friends went to school with me to Louisiana. He had got shot a sophomore year. He was a really good wide receiver named Orrin James, but you know, and he got shot his sophomore year, and you know, and he was able to survive that. He got shot in the arm. But I remember my mom, when she found out that we both were going to Louisiana, going to Grambling State University, she was really happy, because she was like, hey, I want you guys away from this city, because you know, there's so much is going on, and you guys are, you know, I mean, he had already kind of, you know, dodged a situation where, at least, I mean, he didn't dodge the bullet, because it definitely got him, but it didn't, you know, but it didn't kill him. So that was the best part about that. So we both went to school in Louisiana, and I said, you know what? And even that was part of it. I didn't like the fact that he got shot, you know, and I wanted to be, you know, someone who would prevent that from happening in the future to other people. So even that kind of, I mean, I knew I wanted to be in law enforcement, but even when that happened to him, it made me even more, you know, encouraged to do it. You know, I was like, I got to do this. And I remember, like I said, I got the call from the state police recruiter, and, you know, and he said, hey, you know, you want this job? And I just remember saying, man, can I call my mom? And he's like, son, we don't have time for you to call your mother. He's like, we don't do that. He's like, if you want this job or you don't. And I had the feeling that that man had a list of probably 100, 200 names beyond me. He probably didn't care if I took this job or not. So I said, you know what? I'll take the job. And he said, all right, good. We'll see you in August, and hung up. And that was it. And then I called my mom and told her, and like I said, I knew she was going to be that happy. I think back, and I know it was a little bit of a lull in time, maybe a few seconds, where I didn't hear anything from her after I told her. And then she said, okay. And then, like I said, it was history after that. 35 years later, I'm still wearing a uniform, you know, and still serving. So it was something I always wanted to do, Dave. And I just appreciate my mom for supporting me, you know, with my goals and in my career, because even if she didn't, you know, really prefer that I'd be in this profession, she always supported it. Never changed.
Got it. That's true. I did say, okay, but I then said, are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah. She always wanted to make sure that I gave it a second thought, Dave. You know, like, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of ironic, because today, if a recruit says, I want to call my mom before I make a decision, the recruiter or the sergeant or whoever would probably get mom on a three-way instead of just saying, son, make a decision, right? Because you don't want to get that candidate off the, you don't want to get the candidate off the phone due to the numbers.
Well, I used to have to, well, you know, I had to call collect, you know, I was a collect call. I mean, I was like, so back then, I'm sure that recruiter was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to pay for a collect call for you to call your mother.
And probably on a payphone too, with that long cord, right? So you didn't have to get out of your car. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, for all you youngsters out there, Google payphone, and you'll see what we were talking about.
Like,
see what a payphone looks like. I remember making calls from the road, and I always pulled up to the one that had the longest cord so I could make the call in my car with the heat and the air conditioning still on, because I didn't want to freeze or boil my butt off. So Lil, your son's out there. He gets into ISP. He's rolling around. Did anything, you know, what was the major concern? And you read the papers. You lived it. You live on the South Side. You know what the good and the bad, right? I mean,
yes.
I worked here. A little side note. I worked at 200 West 87th Street at Anthony's Contracting, which is now the Home Depot. That used to be a scrapyard back in the day. So I used to go on the, and I was from Des Plaines, right? I was living with my folks in Des Plaines, and I would come all the way down. I'd be on the Edens. I'd be on the Kennedy. I'd be on the Dan Ryan. I knew exactly. I'd get off at 87th Street, go west two blocks, and Anthony Contracting was right there, right? Ryerson was behind it. I know the neighborhood, right? I was in that neighborhood, okay? So what was it like knowing that your son was coming back and the concerns that you had that he was going to be patrolling in his hometown?
My concerns were just magnified. I was constantly worried. And again, as I said before, I had to put my faith out there for him because he wanted to do it. And I knew he would do it. And I knew he would do a good job. But it doesn't keep you from worry. I don't care how old they get, you still worry. So it was a definite concern every night. It was concerned because he always worked the night shift. So until he got home in the morning, I couldn't rest. But until he got a higher position where he wasn't out there as often. But I still worry now. I still worry. It's a part of what a mother does.
Sure.
You worry about totally children. I don't care what they do.
Well, you know, he's pushing a lot of pencils and paper now, you know, being the big shot up there in DeKalb. So, other than a paper cut and maybe falling off the curb on the way to his car, I think he's pretty safe, but I understand.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that my mom knows me better than that, too, Dave. She knows. You know, if my guys are in it, I'm in it with them. So she's
he's a definite participant.
I got that from Dave. So Lil.
Yes.
You got your son out there patrolling. So for our listeners that don't realize this, the Illinois State Police back in the day, Dave, you had the highways, right? I mean, you all had the interstates.
Yep.
And you did support when any local municipality needed it, right? And the Chicago needed it. About 1980, what was it, 84, 85, the city and the state got into an agreement where because the city of Chicago cops used to patrol the Kennedy and the Dan Ryan,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right? And the Eisenhower. And then somewhere in the 80s, I remember.
86, we took over the Chicago Expressways. Yeah.
You guys took over the Chicago Expressways, and that was a game changer for y'all, right? Because typically, you wouldn't come into the city. You're a Southside guy, right? And Mimi McGrill, who was on earlier, she's a Southside gal,
yeah.
right? So what was it like knowing that you wouldn't be patrolling south of the city on 55 or up where you're at now in 88 in DeKalb and all the way out to Iowa or all the way down to Kentucky or all the way over to Indiana? What was it like knowing that you'd be able to come home and patrol around where you grew up?
Yeah, you know what? That was actually, you know, I started in 89, so it was about 3 years after the fact. And so, I mean, we had kind of got our footprint in there. And I mean, this is all I knew, Dave. I didn't know this was, you know, I mean, I came into it. I cut my teeth exactly the way that it was formed at the time. So I went right into working the Eisenhower. I worked midnights on the west side of Chicago for over 20 years on midnights alone. And then I would go, and I enjoyed it. It was amazing. It was so much. I know my mom hated to hear this because it was so much action going on. It was so much going on the west side of Chicago. Dave, I was in pursuit every night. I was in foot pursuit every night, at the bad guys. And I would, and I would tell my mom about it the next day. And she'd be like, oh, my God, I don't need to hear any more of these stories about you chasing somebody down a dark alley at 3 a.m. on the west side of Chicago. She just didn't want to hear it anymore. But I loved it, though, Dave. And, this is why I got on this job, because I wanted to be impactful and make a difference. And I wanted to, I wanted to protect the people who couldn't protect themselves. So that was the main reason why I wanted to do this job. And that was part of it. But my mom and my grandmother both of them were like, oh, yeah, we don't need to hear all these stories. Just, you can save all the action stuff. We don't need to hear it.
Got it. Well, what was it like for you to hear all of these stories. I know you chimed in there and said you didn't like it, but for other mothers out there, like Maggie, who's listening now, who's Mimi's mom, who's still on the phone with us, what was it like for you to hear that? And then I'll let the moms go back and forth and talk about, you know, their experiences and how they dealt with it and how they overcame all of their anxiety. So, Lil, what was it like hearing, you know, Dave come home and say he jumped over the fence and tore his trousers and running around the West Side in his underpants? Well, you know,
we heard that. It was frightening. It was absolutely frightening. And my heart was just like always constantly beating until I knew he was home. It was just when I knew he was at home after his shift, then I could actually rest. But during that time, especially during his rookie years, I don't know if I ever really got any sleep because it was just something that constantly kept me awake and I worried. And then when he had the accident, I was just out of my mind with worry about that whole thing. It was, I'm telling you, law enforcement, I appreciate you guys. I know you do a lot for us, but it's scary. It is just really scary when your child is out there working as hard as he did. And his heart was so in it. And he wanted to do it so badly. And he did a good job. He always did a good job. It was always 110%. That's what he gave the ISP. So,
No. So Lily and Maggie, as mothers, did you guys used to talk amongst yourselves or did you talk amongst your friends? How did you guys deal with the anxiety knowing that Mimi's out there 5'2" with her big mouth chasing bad down bad guys? That's a direct quote from you, Maggie, because I don't need any I don't need any slaps to the back of the head when I see Mimi next. And how did
Loud
you cope? How did you guys cope? What was your mechanisms as mothers?
As a parent, I prayed a lot went on my faith.
Yes. You pray a lot and you just, you know, I was able to talk to, you know, my husband, you know, to tell my husband the stories. I was able to talk with my friends. No one was in law enforcement though. So, you know, they were just like amazed at like some of the stories that I told them. But, and Lil, I mean, what a wonderful job you did with Dave, because Mimi is who she is today because of him being there to guide her through the, ISP. And I know Dave pretty well. I don't know, you know, I've only met Lil a couple times, but the respect that everyone has for Dave is unbelievable. He is, and he has earned it. And now when I hear that he wore his little badge when he went to school, like he knew from way, way early how good he was going to be. So I thank you, Dave.
Oh, thank you, Mom. I appreciate you. I was going to take care of your precious gem. I told her, we used to work together a day. We worked together a lot and I mentored Mimi and I was a supervisor when she came on. But that was one of the things I told her mom that, you know, I said, hey, don't worry. I'll get her home every day. And I promised her that. I felt like, you know, at the end of my career with the state police, you know, when I retired as colonel, you know, Mimi took my place, Dave, immediately. So I felt that sense of accomplishment because I knew I did and followed up with my promise to her mom to make sure that she made it home every day because she worked with me so much and I, you know, on an every night basis. So I felt like, you know, and then when she had children, I even felt even more like I said, oh, my God, now she's got kids. And I was like, I got to make sure she gets home. I can't, you know, and it got to a point where I think Mimi would get upset because she would be like, you know, like I would overstep on certain situations and try to like shelter her. And she would be like, you know, and because she's so strong willed, She's like, Dave, I got this. You know, I'm like, all right, okay, let me back up then. Because, but I was like, but I promised your mom, I got to get you home. So, but she was so strong-willed, Dave, she would get upset when I would, like, kind of pull rank on her, you know. And but she would tell me, she's like, no, I got this. I don't need you to do that. And I, that's why I respect, you know, I mean, Mimi is, like I said, we're best friends. And that's the reason why, because we spent so much time together working on the midnight shift for years, you know, Dave.
Got it. So Lil, what would you tell, I asked the same question to Maggie, what would you tell mothers of young boys and girls out there thinking about, because you have another son, Dave, you got a brother who's CPD, right?
Well, yeah, but it's not, that's not through my mother, but that's, yeah.
Gotcha.
Melvin Branch, yeah.
He's a bonus.
He's a bonus. God,
he's a bonus
child.
Yeah. So what would you tell other, so you worry about him just not as much as you worry about Dave, patrolling the mean streets of DeKalb now. So what, and hang on, I just want to go back for our listeners that don't realize what was going on in the 80s. On the South and West Side, that was El Rookin time, right? Right, Chief Bird, wasn't that? Wasn't that? Yeah, Latin Kings and El Rookins.
Yeah,
it was war zone. But I mean, it's bad now with the gangs. But we had some nasty stuff going on in the 80s
with
the El Rookins and the Latin Kings, right?
Yeah, you're talking about the Kings, the GDs, of course, the Vice Lords on the West Side. Yeah, yep, and then you know. And Dave, like my mom said, you know, she kind of mentioned the accident I had, but I wanted to go back to that because I know I was like, oh, man, this is not going to go well, because she was so, you know, because, you know, when you have to make that phone call to your mom to say you've been in a serious accident.
Yeah.
I got hit from the rear by a drunk and it was a gas leak. I mean, he knocked the mess out of me, Dave. I had a gas leak. He completely crushed the rear of the car. He pushed me into ongoing traffic. Now, this all happened around 3 a.m. And I remember it like it was yesterday. It was 290 westbound at Keeler on the Eisenhower. And he pushed me into traffic. And you know, and it wasn't too long before that. A good friend of mine was killed the same way from the state police. But there was a car I had stopped, and then another car struck me from the rear. But luckily, Dave, the car had stopped, had already left. So he was able, I got pushed into traffic. But my friend, who was named Chung Lim, he's a trooper, Chung Lim, he got pent between the two cars in his car, and he died from this accident. So I was very lucky that the other car that I had stopped had already left. Otherwise, I mean, I probably wouldn't be here today, you know. So, So I know my mom hated that call, you know, but I think it made her feel better that she could hear my voice. At least it's me calling and not, you know, someone other than me. Somebody
showing up at my door.
Somebody showing up at the door, and it's like, oh my God, you know, like, and, you know, and my mom, you know, she doesn't drive, so it's not like she could just jump up and go to the hospital and check on me without assistance, you know. And but I know my grandmother was extremely upset, and you know, and my mom, you know, and I think we tried to keep that from her, right, Mom, at first.
Yeah, then, we did.
And then when she found out, she was very upset because she didn't like when people kept things from her. So I don't think she was too happy with my mom about that.
So getting in trouble for what your son does doesn't get, you know, it doesn't stop as you get older is what you're saying. So I got, as a father of three girls, I got a lot to look forward to then. That's great.
Yes, you do.
So Lil, for other mothers out there whose sons and daughters are thinking about becoming a member of the law enforcement community, what would you tell them about the nerves that you had and about supporting their kids with their chosen
profession? They actually want to do it, I would say you should be very supportive of them. It's not going to keep you from worrying, because you will. As a parent, you will always worry. But I definitely think that if this is what they want to do, and they have decided, like my son, that this was what he was going to do, then all I can say is give them your full support and always be there for them and always listen to them. I've listened to a lot of that he told me, but I just didn't want to retain it because some of it was just too dark and scary. But just listen and be there for them.
And be supportive. Yeah, pray a lot.
And pray a lot.
All right. Well, we appreciate you and Mimi's mom, Maggie, jumping on. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers
thank
out
you.
There.
That's right. Happy Mother's Day to everybody. Yes.
And Maggie, thank happy you Mother's as well. Day. Thank you as well. This has been another episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you're interested in sponsoring the show, give me a call. It's been sponsored by Team Hochberg. If you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance your existing home and get discounts for you and your family members, like your two moms here, like our two moms here, give me a call, 855-56-DAVID, or go to 56David.com. Thank you.